When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast, Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod. It is a podcast about scary stories, spooky things you tell us about, urban legends, really anything sort of Halloween adjacent.
Halloween adjacent, scarecrows, pumpkin.
It's a lot of like babies seeing ghosts, a lot of cats seeing ghosts.
Yeah, this is the Yankee Candle of horror podcasts.
Yeah.
Something non-invasive, gentle, but it's warming and you want it lit.
Yeah, when something's gone wrong, you'll be glad you had it to cover it up, I guess.
Did you have, is there someone in your family who is the Yankee Candle person?
My brother, Richard Dresden.
Oh, I knew it. That's
He's a
great,
Yankee
Richard.
Candle guy. He married a Yankee Candle girl, She's more of a White Barn Candle girl from Bath and Body Works.
Class.
But what he started doing, and my mom, it turns her wig 360 every time he does it, but you can get a custom photo put on the candle.
Whoa.
That says, love you from your son.
This is really going to change my gift giving game from this point forward.
She kind of just went blank in the face. Like it was almost too good.
I know. It's because what would a mom love more than a candle? And it would be a candle that is personalized for her.
When you print a picture of a mom with someone she loves and you give her that thing and you are in the picture, that's all. That's all.
I definitely have some Yankee Candle aunts, and I love that a kind of recurring thing to have with the aunt is that like when you come over, they're like, guess what today's is? And then you have to guess what the scent is.
Oh, that's cute.
And once we're in like there are a lot of cookie themed Yankee Candles and they all kind of smell the same to me.
Yeah, vanilla.
Yeah, because sometimes you get into like sugar cookie and then it will be like Christmas cookie. And I'm like, what's the game plan here? How is this different? Yeah.
Describe.
Yeah. Well, I guess one of them has an almond flavor in it. I don't know. Mm.
Do you like vanilla smell?
Chris and I have an important rule. I will allow vanilla smell in the kitchen. I can't have food smell candles in our bathrooms.
Wow. That's a kosher rule, I believe.
Yeah.
that was like a food safety thing.
It already, like we do, we're seasonal soap gays. So already was hard enough. Like we have a pumpkin hand soap.
What's the one you guys do? Main coasters?
What
is it?
Main coasters. Yeah. It's Main Woods.
No, Stone Country.
Oh, sorry. Stonewall Kitchen.
Stonewall Kitchen.
Main coasters I do like though.
These are really
main
close.
Coasters.
There's other ones, but forget that.
Stonewall Kitchen. We don't want to get into tertiary coasters.
Yeah, and the smell Main Woods is like a famous. Your Stonewall Kitchen soap mm-hmm. gaze. This is hand soap, liquid soap that you can buy at a deluxe gourmet grocery store.
Yes.
Like a nice grocery store that has like loofahs for sale in the front.
They do. They have like Ouija board drink trays.
And you're like, I love that this store sells that. I'm going to go buy eggs, but oh my God.
Yeah, it's late March. What is this for? Yeah.
What does Main Woods smell like?
Main Woods is sort of a birch, like smoky smell.
Okay.
We use that one a lot. We use Coastal Breeze.
You
that
definitely use nice. Coastal Breeze.
Yeah. Beach smells belong in the bathroom.
That's true. Because the bathroom is the closest thing we have to a beach.
Yeah.
Where land meets sea.
Moses came down from the mount and he said, bathrooms smells
where
beach.
Land meets the beach.
Yeah, I can do a vanilla. I just can't do. I'm trying to think. Sometimes, like I love the smell of cinnamon, but sometimes it's all like if cinnamon's in anything, it's all we're getting. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So I like
people forget that cinnamon isn't sweet. It's like dirt.
That is, when I went to college and I found out cinnamon could be savory and is often used in a lot of Indian cooking, that really blew my wig off.
2006 was a big year for us.
Huge. Learned about Thai food in general.
I didn't know I was allowed to have hummus. I thought you had to, that was like a, you had to get like a license.
Anna, I'm about to confess something very embarrassing about hookah lounges.
Okay.
I thought hookah was a liquid that you sucked in your mouth from the thing and that it was different flavors. And I didn't know where the smoke came in to it at all.
Oh my God.
No, thought it was
you
a liquid.
You fucking loser. Yeah. Get him.
And I was like, everyone's going to these hookah lounges.
Everybody's drinking out of the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the like smoke element's not all that different, but
wow.
Did you ever hookah?
Oh my God, it's all I did for a week and a half.
Yeah, that's right.
It was, I thought about it a lot because I lived with three girls who were all very advanced.
Yeah.
And I thought that our RAs were going to check our beds at night. Yes. I was like, what time do they do rounds to see if we're in our beds? And they were like, I've been fucking and sucking for like 12 years. I can't believe I live with you. But they let me tag along to a hookah lounge one night. And I was like, again, it was similar to hummus where yeah. I was like, in my own life, I can have this.
Right.
It blew my mind.
Massive change. Yeah. I know I've already told the story in the pod about how I didn't understand how to, like, I knew what the foods were to have for breakfast, but I didn't know that if you skipped breakfast, it was going to be okay. Like, you did it. But my first day of classes, I was rushing and I put a bunch of Fruit Loops into a plastic tub.
We just told the story last week.
Yeah, I think so.
I won't let you tell it again.
Thank you. And I appreciate that for your generosity.
No, I just, you know.
No, it needs to be heard. It doesn't need to be heard a second time. It needs to be heard that I said it before because listen, gentle listeners, I'm like you. I listen to other people's podcasts, mm-hmm. and when they repeat things, I'm like, how is this possible?
You're like,
how can you do that?
Do I exist?
Right.
Am I nothing?
And the fact that as I'm saying this, I'm recalling the exact moment I told the story, and you're right. It was very, very, very
No, sad. I just remembered loving it so much.
No, but all that is to say is that I appreciate those early college days of really not knowing how everything works, mm-hmm. but still looking like a 32-year-old person.
Yeah, in pajama pants.
In pajama pants. Uneven. Unevenly cut.
You did famously try to cut the bottoms of your yoga pants, your male yoga pants.
Because I didn't want to look immature by having ragged cuffs around, like, too long sweatpants. So instead, they were just uneven, like, Halloween store witch pants.
Yeah, you looked like a pirate.
Exactly.
You got pirate pants. I famously, when I studied abroad in London, I didn't know where to buy a bath towel. I didn't know what kind of store sold them. So I just used a hand towel the entire semester.
Oh, Anna.
And I would just take my hand before I use the towel and like slick off the water with my hand and then go over it with the towel. I was too scared to go to the towel store.
Oh my God. I think something I'm realizing is I thought tofu and fresh mozzarella were the same thing. And I remember sometimes having like just cold tofu at the dining hall and being like, God, this mozzarella is weird. Something has happened.
How different would we be? Like, it's crazy that just because we liked and showed some aptitude for the arts yes. and had parents who could like afford to have us take on that kind of commitment.
Right.
Put us in a place where we were around a lot of cool people.
Yeah.
What would we be like?
I have a pretty clear sense. I feel like I might have gotten really into like the show Heroes or something. You know, like I feel like I was very impressionable at that age, and I think I needed someone to be like, well, just consider another thing, you know.
Nope, it's Heroes.
Just consider one more thing. Yeah.
I would be, I don't know where I'd be, but I'd definitely be holding a big iced tea and a big key ring in a parking lot having a loud conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see you rushing with a huge thing of iced tea.
Yeah.
The clatter of the ice.
Oh, the clatter of the ice, the clatter of the keys. I've done it before, but.
A very important maturing moment in my life was, our mutual friend James Monaco, who's like a very educated person, mm-hmm. Who we went to school with. I think like my sophomore year or something came up about like what are the novels that dictate like your generation? And I was like, well, I mean, the Harry Potter books are, you know, probably have had such a huge impression. And James said, well, for children. And I was like, got it. Yes.
For children.
Right.
Oh, no.
Right. And I was like, okay, I guess I need to read this Italo Calvino book right now.
For children. Oh, okay. I'm going to go to another room.
Yeah. Anna, you saw Dune today.
Dune I saw 2. Dune 2. I love Dune 2.
I'm very excited to see it. And because of Dune, giant worms were fresh on my mind.
They're fresh.
So for
they are fresh.
You know what? A little too much sass mouth.
If you go boom, 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 they're like, I'm eating a tank. Every time. They're never like, I'm full.
Those giant worms.
Those friggin' shy
hoes. This episode is about giant monster worms from across the world.
Couldn't be more thrilled.
Here's the thing. I was surprised that there wasn't more information about the folklore and mythology of giant worms, because between Dune and like Beetlejuice and mm-hmm. Tremors,
yep,
these are three pretty significant pop culture giant worms.
Yeah.
And what I was really delighted to see is that as best as Wikipedia can muster, the inspiration for all three of those things is something called the Mongolian death worm.
Oh.
Have you heard of this before?
I know that I've heard the phrase, it's ringing a tiny little bell, but yeah. I don't know anything about it. I'm excited to learn.
I was making a show about cryptids in America with my frequent musical collaborator, Andrew Butler, and we were just focused on the cryptids of America, but we got a lot of people talking about Mongolian death worms, which, according to Wikipedia, the Mongolian death worm, or in Mongolian, and I'm going to mispronounce this, but this is how Google, I believe, told me it's pronounced. Olgoy Korkoy, which translates...
Sounds like a death worm.
Which, Anna, it translates to large intestine worm.
Sure.
Is a creature alleged to exist in the Gobi Desert. Investigations into the legendary creature have been pursued by amateur cryptozoologists and credited academics alike. But there has been very little evidence found to support its existence. It can be considered a cryptid or a mythological animal. Tales of the creature first came to Western attention as a result of Roy Chapman Andrews' 1926 book On the Trail of Ancient Man. The American paleontologist described secondhand tales of the monster that he had heard at a gathering of Mongolian officials. None of those present ever had seen the creature, but they all firmly believed in its existence and described it minutely. In 1983, a specimen of Tartar sand boa, which is a big, huge snake, was shown to locals who claimed to have seen Olgoy Korkoy, and they confirmed that this was the same animal. So the Tartar sand boa is like a 4-foot-long big snake, and it that lives in the sand, and it would make sense that like people would see that and be like, this is a huge worm, especially if the head of the snake was burrowed in the sand. You wouldn't like get a sense of this being a snake. So the appearance of the Mongolian death worm in On the Trail of Ancient Man, Andrews cites Mongolian Prime Minister Dam Din Bazar, who in 1922 described the worm. It is shaped like a sausage, about 2 feet long, has no head nor leg, and it is so poisonous that merely to touch it means instant death. It lives in the most desolate parts of the Gobi Desert. In 1932, Andrews published this information again in the book The New Conquest of Central Asia, adding, it is reported to live in the most arid, sandy regions of the western Gobi. Andrews, however, did not believe in the creature's existence. The worm is said to inhabit the western or southern Gobi. In the 1987 book, Iltajan Tazak Gavad, Ivan Makary cites a Mongolian legend which describes the creature as traveling underground, creating waves of sand on the surface, which allow it to be detected. It is said it can kill at a distance, either by spraying a venom at its prey or by means of electric discharge.
Oh.
It primarily lives and burrows underground, only rarely coming to the surface. So this is, see, in my head, I always imagine the Mongolian death worm is like a giant worm, but this just sounds like it is a very poisonous worm.
I guess I pictured it like the little worm that comes in tequila.
Oh, very scary when something deadly is that small.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Are you looking at pictures?
I looked at pictures of Mongolian Deathworm, and that's how I found out that there's a movie from 2010.
A sci-fi original movie.
A sci-fi original movie called Mongolian Deathworm. Yeah, a lot of them are sort of scientific-looking drawings, which I think is nice. I'm seeing a lot of the electric discharge that you're talking about.
That, you know, I'm kind of surprised that doesn't show up in a movie like Tremors, because you figure with all the friction underground, you know, sand rubbing up against worm body.
I mean, a lot of them just look like things you'd want 20 minutes alone with, you know what I mean?
Oh, God. Wow.
Can I borrow that Mongolian death worm for like 2 or 3 days? I'll give it back.
Oh, God.
Oh, look at this one. That's so scary. That's nothing like you described.
No, that's a man with worm arms.
That's a man with worm arms and legs. He's wearing a khaki shirt, kind of, and he doesn't have eyes, and he's wearing like black Dahlia lipstick.
Wow. Wouldn't you love if the Mongolian prime minister described the Mongolian death worm that way? It's like, it lives underground. It's a man in a khaki shirt.
And then somebody crocheted one and put a little Lego guy in his mouth. It's kind of cute.
Yeah, they're very frequently depicted as being kind of a raspberry color.
Oh.
Very sort of bright.
I don't like I'm going to say it right here on the podcast. I don't like a red worm.
No. Oh.
Because I have that in my head from childhood, that if you see a blood worm, and that can drink your blood, which is not true.
Now what's the blood worm?
It's just a red worm. I don't know.
I didn't know
this
about
this. Something I was told on a playground.
I really thought you were going to say, this is something I was told on a date.
This is something I was told on a date. ew.
A very serious man in a suit.
Their bite is painful even to a human. Maybe they are bad. Hang on a second. I guess they use it for bait?
A bloody worm.
No, it's a worm.
Oh, yeah. I don't like how that looks.
No, this has teeth. I guess, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, worm-like things I find very distressing. Like, I always hated pictures of lampreys.
No,
really
those...
I dislike lampreys.
I think we got to get rid of them.
Yeah, let's get rid of... Everybody, get out there.
Please write in. Let us know if you think we should get rid of lampreys. And if not, why they're important.
We got to watch Mongolian Deathworm, the film, starring Sean Patrick Flannery.
Yeah.
Powder himself. So from the Wikipedia page for the Mongolian Deathworm, I found some sisters across the globe. This next one is, I didn't find as much information about, but it is interesting to me. This cryptid is called Sinkhole Sam.
Oh.
Sinkhole Sam is a worm-like creature. Said to inhabit a portion of Inman Lake in Kansas, known as the Sinkhole. Huh. It is also known as the Fuppengurkle, though there is no solid explanation of what that might have meant.
Fuppengurkle.
This I should say, is from Cryptids with a Z wiki. Before America was colonized by Europeans, it's so funny to have Cryptids wiki be like, and this is a colonized... We are colonizers, which is true.
We are living on unceded Sinkhole Sam ground.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Cryptid Wiki. Kansas was covered in small streams, lakes, and rivers. But since then, they have been blocked up and dried out, leaving only a few natural lakes and streams. Locals theorize that Sam is actually a prehistoric creature that lived in flooded underground caverns that somehow led into the lake. The first known account of the beast came from two men who were fishing at the sinkhole when they saw the creature. Following this event, Albert Neufeld and George Reger also claimed to have seen the creature, claiming that it was approximately 15 feet at length and about as round as an automobile tire. It's so funny to say about as round as an automobile tire.
Yeah, this is a circle.
Yeah, that's a circle.
Oh, it's about as round as a circle.
But like for cool guys.
And then I found the original article from... some Kansas newspaper in the 1950s, written by Mary Kay Flynn.
Oh, a career gal.
Career gal. Love to see it. And here's a little excerpt. Things are buzzing down at the sinkhole, especially now that the drought is here. With the water falling, there's more chance to see Sinkhole Sam, Kansas's answer to the Loch Ness Monster. Sinkhole Sam, bless his slimy heart, was first spotted. I love the
South.
Yeah. Well, Kansas, what is Kansas? Midwest?
Oh, I'm too dumb to know.
No, okay. It's okay.
Jason just nodded Americanly.
Two fishermen were sitting on the bank of the 100-acre fishing spot 4 miles southeast of here. No fish. Suddenly, Sam showed up. The fishermen saw him break water. That sounds like an old term fart euphemism pee? For like a wet fart.
Yeah.
I broke water. The fishermen saw him break water. He had a flat head and 15 feet back, a tail of some sort. In between was a snake-like body. The fishermen showed Sam their heels, but that started the greatest monster hunt in the history of the sinkhole.
History?
Everybody came out to get a glimpse of Sam. Those who claim to have seen him say his body is 21 inches around. In drawings by Kansas artists, Sam is shown with a 5-foot tail, a long fin on his back, and a big non-snake-like grin.
Oh.
George Reger Jr. was standing on a little bridge over the sinkhole and swears he saw Sam, and Sam was fit as a monster. This is so funny that this is a newspaper article.
And 1953?
In 19...
I forgot that this was from 1953. I was like, what?
What's happening?
Fit as a monster.
Local papers are giving Sam a big play, reporting that many responsible citizens say they've seen him. Others scoff. The scoffers say, how could a monster get into the sinkhole in the first place? It's just a depression in the earth that's been constantly sagging and widening since the oil company did core drilling on the site 25 years ago.
That's how you get a monster.
That is the beginning of a horror movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the beginning of Mongolian Sinkhole, the movie.
It's like saying, like, well, how on earth could there be a Godzilla? We've been bombing this iguana since the beginning of time. Like
a poltergeist. This is a burial ground.
The believers scoff at the scoffers. They say the area is inundated by floods every so often, and Sam could have come in with the fishes from Inman Lake or the Little Arkansas River during a flood. Or maybe he was down in some underground pool all along and just got swimming room as the sinkhole sank.
Yeah. So,
sightseers keep flocking around the sinkhole, waiting for a sight of Sam, but the fishermen stay away. They don't want to hook the best monster to hit Kansas since the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Wow.
Love that.
God, newspapers used to have style.
I know. I'm a big fan. And I love
the flair.
I love a reporter woman from back then.
Say, boys.
Say, fellas. Let's make a movie about her. Anna, we're going to close it out. I'm just doing three worms.
I think that's plenty.
So, yeah, because the world is Mongolia, Kansas, and County Durham in Northeast England.
Yeah.
Because this, Anna, is the Lambton Worm. Have you ever heard this story?
No, but it just put a pit in my stomach. I hate the sound of it.
Very upsetting story.
Okay.
Of which there is a long epic song about, like a long epic folk song.
Great.
And there have been operas made of this story. It's pretty nuts. The story, or the legend, of the Lambton Worm revolves around John Lambton, who is a real person, an heir of the Lambton Estate in County Durham, and his battle with a giant worm that had been terrorizing local villages. The story states that the young John Lambton was a rebellious character who missed church one Sunday to go fishing in the River Wear. In many versions of the story, while walking to the river or setting up his equipment, John receives warnings from an old man or witch, depending on who tells the story, that no good can come from missing church. I doubt a witch would say that to you.
I think a witch would be like, rock on. Hell yeah.
I'm making a big breakfast for myself while all those other suckers are yet.
I'm doing weird stuff with my friggin' pussy. Yeah, no. Okay.
Oh,
it's
not the Crusades yet. John Lambton does not catch anything until the church service finishes, at which point he fishes out a small worm or lamprey-like creature with 9 holes on each side of its salamander-like head.
Hey, can I borrow that thing? No way.
9 holes.
I'll give it back.
No. John Lambton.
Oh, my God. Can I borrow your bedroom?
Depending on the version of the story, the worm is no bigger than a thumb. Can I borrow that? Or...
Oh, perfect.
Or about 3 feet long, which, you know...
I mean, tag yourself, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's the 90s. In some renditions, it has legs, while in others, it is said to more closely resemble a snake. At this point, the old man or witch returns... Although in some versions, it is a different character. John declares that he has catched the devil and decides to dispose of his catch by discarding it down a nearby well. The old man then issues further warnings about the nature of the beast. John then forgets about the creature and eventually grows up. As a penance for his rebellious early years, he joins the Crusades, as you do. Because the story is often said to have taken place in the 14th century, he likely fought in the Barbary Crusade or Lithuanian Crusade. Eventually, though, the worm grows extremely large and the well becomes poisonous. The villagers start to notice livestock going missing and discover that the fully grown worm has emerged from the well and coiled itself around a local hill. Ah. Earlier and local versions of the legend associate the hill with Worm Hill in Fatfield.
Is England okay?
This sounds like a British Yo Mama joke. Which is like, your mama lives in Worm Hill in Fatfield.
When her worm wraps itself around the hill, it wraps itself around the hill. Yeah.
In most versions of the story, the worm is large enough to wrap itself around the hill 7 times. Your worm is so fat, it can wrap itself around Worm Hill 7 times. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It is said that one person can... It is said that one can still see the marks of the worm on Worm Hill. However, in later song, the hill is Penshaw Hill, on which the Penshaw Monument now stands. The worm terrorizes the nearby villages, eating sheep, preventing cows from producing milk, and snatching away small children. It then heads towards Lambton Castle, where the Lord... John Lambton's aged father, manages to sedate the creature in what becomes a daily ritual of offering the worm the milk of 9 good cows. Okay.
Babe, what are you up to today? I'm fucking busy, I said. Stop smothering me.
I just don't know. He like says he has to go feed the worm the milk of 9 good cows, but like I never see him with the milk.
No, he's like not like that.
And he came back and he was like, it was like a long curly red hair on his coat. After 7 years, John Lambton returns from the Crusades to find his father's estates almost destitute because of the worm, because they're giving it all the milk. John decides to fight the worm, but first seeks the guidance of a wise woman or witch near Durham. And which I believe stands like is an old English word for like to know something.
Yeah.
Or someone with knowledge. The witch hardens John's resolve to kill the beast by explaining his responsibility for the worm. She tells him to cover his armor in spearheads and fight the worm in the river Ware, where it now spends its days wrapped around a great rock. Mm. The witch also tells John that after killing the worm, he must then kill the first living thing he sees.
No.
Or else his family will be cursed for 9 generations and will not die in their beds.
Oh.
John prepares his armor according to the witch's instructions and arranges with his father that when he has killed the worm, he will sound his hunting horn 3 times. On the signal, his father is to release his favorite hound so that it will run to John, who can then kill the dog, thus avoiding the curse. John Lambton then fights the worm by the river. The worm tries to crush him, wrapping him in its coils, but it cuts itself on his armor spikes. The pieces of the worm fall into the river and are washed away before they can join up again. Mm. Eventually, the worm is dead, and John sounds his hunting horn 3 times. Unfortunately, John's father is so excited that the beast is dead that he forgets to release the hound and rushes out to congratulate his son.
Oh, you dumb dick.
John cannot bear to kill his father, and so, after they meet, the hound is released and dutifully dispatched, but it's too late, and 9 generations of Lambdons are cursed, so they shall not die peacefully in their beds.
No.
And, historically speaking, the next 9 generations of Lambdons do not die peacefully in their beds. First generation, Robert Lambton, drowned at Newrig. Second generation, Sir William Lambton, a colonel of foot, killed at Marston Moor. Third generation, William Lambton, dies in the Battle of Wakefield. And then it goes on and on and on, all people dying in battles. And then finally, 9th generation, Henry Lambton, died in his carriage crossing Lambton Bridge on the 26th of June, 1761.
Oh.
So there's this huge cultural impact from this story, where there's this huge song written in 1867 by C.M. Lumain. which passed into oral tradition and has several slightly different variants, most notably the use of goggly or googly eyes,
hey,
meaning bulging and searching.
There we
and
go.
That's where it comes from.
From goggly worm.
Or googly, from
it
worm
comes
song.
From worm.
I got all excited because I thought Wikipedia had the full song, but it's just like a MIDI file of like, which I'm not very interested in.
Just sing some garbage to yourself and that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. I do love that it is in this very folksy, like one Sunday morn, young Lambden went a fishing in the weir and catched a fish upon his heuk. H-E-U-K. Love that.
Heuk.
He thought was very queer. And then it has a translation that means very strange and not a gay ass worm.
That's a gay ass worm.
Oh, I caught a gay ass worm.
And that's where googly eyes comes from.
That's where googly eyes. So then years later, Bram Stoker in 1911 wrote a novel called The Lair of the White Worm.
Oh.
And a feature film adaptation of that was made, which is one of the strangest movies I've ever seen in my life.
Who is what year and who's in it?
Let's see. It was made into a film in 1988.
Oh, recent.
By Ken Russell, who directed The Who's Tommy. And wow. also the science fiction film Altered States, which I saw on TV, like an unedited version of when I was way too young, and it really weirded me out.
No.
But the cast is bonkers. It's Hugh Grant in one of his like early film appearances.
This is a cool movie.
Yeah. Peter Capaldi.
Yes.
Amanda Donahue, who I don't know. But it's kind of about... Oh, and yeah, Peter Capaldi, who's Doctor Who. And it's kind of about a town of like vampire worm, like, or I guess like worm vampires. There's like a cult in a British town. It's very like The Wicker Man.
Cool.
I guess what's interesting about this to me too is that I think there was a long period of time where the Brits interchangeably used the term worm and dragon.
Huh.
But this one goes to a little more extensive description of it being worm-like and not a dragon.
Although, like, curling itself around a hill feels sort of dragon-like.
That's true.
I've never seen a worm do that.
I wonder, because I guess part of the story is that the whole deal with the worm is that people tried to kill it, but it could reform, which that feels very wormy to me. That when you
is wormy. That's not dragon.
Yeah, when kids, like, cut an earthworm in half and the worm keeps going.
Yeah, that actually happened to me once. That's why there's two of me.
I was laying in a puddle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was raining. I went on the sidewalk.
Are you squeamish about worms?
Well, I used to love them in a weird way when I was a little kid.
Oh, 4-H Club. I know that's not
Well, this was before that.
Oh, okay.
When I was like a toddler, I would go outside and lift up rocks and take them out and carry them around in my hand.
Oh.
And I would... Did I give him little kisses? Yeah.
Wow. Did you clean them?
No.
Okay.
And I said they were my best friend.
The worm was the best friend.
My aunt said I walked around with worms in my pockets. I would never put them in a pocket. They'd get crushed.
Oh, yeah. You're not crazy.
I'm not crazy. I like my worms. I think things weren't okay at home. So I was like, I'm going to find a friend that's all mine.
I love this.
I like you.
Give me a kiss.
I am big. I am so big.
Were you ever an ant farm kid?
I think I had one at some point when I was like, it's not quite working. What about you?
It's funny. I think like, I feel something that you and I share is there were points in our childhood where we were like, it's time to do this thing that children do.
Yeah. Yeah,
uh-huh. You know, this will be right if I do this thing that I've seen kids do in media.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an ant farm, but I had an ant playground that you used to be able to buy that was like, is sort of like a large snow globe looking thing with no water inside, obviously. And it had like little rides for the ants to go on.
And, which, of course, they would never.
Right. They're on the job. It was kind of torturous for them to give them a weekend. But I would sort of view it. And I'd always put them back. Like, I'd take a few ants from, like, an ant hill nearby. And I'd let them, like, explore the. I really did view it as, like, I'm giving them a little vacation. And then I'll bring them back.
That's really sweet. The concept of leisure has not yet hit the ant hill.
Right. Yeah. I guess that is kind of like. Yeah, it was like giving a business student a day at an amusement park.
Yeah.
They're not quite ready for it.
I did have a bug box.
What's a bug box?
Bug box? No. It's a piece of wood with mesh arched over it, and then a piece of wood on one end, and then a little door on the other. Whoa. And you can put bugs and sticks and stuff in there. You close the door and you look at it.
Would you put multiple different types of bugs in there?
Sometimes, yes.
Oh.
Sometimes I would.
I always wonder with bugs, do they know each other? Like,
you know? Oh, do you guys, Worm, do you know Ant?
Oh, no.
Praying Mantis, you're being really antisocial.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's like they're not, I know bugs aren't all the same species. But I am kind of...
Do they know each other? That's amazing.
Yeah, do they view themselves as like, we're closer than these giant humans that are looking at us?
Yeah. I think they don't, like, think about stuff.
Have you ever seen that video of, a dung beetle coming across a robotic version of it? So, like, there's a fake robotic dung beetle that's, like...
That sounds like an episode of Black Mirror. That's heartbreaking.
And immediately the dung beetle picks up the robot and throws it off the bench. And someone commented on Twitter, like, imagine you're walking down the street and you see a guy walk up to a giant automaton version of itself, pick it up over its head, and throw it off a cliff to its death.
Yeah.
And then just be like, time to go eat the leaf.
I gotta roll this shit around. I gotta roll.
I thank God every day that bugs aren't big.
Well, Andrew...
With Mongolian deathworms out there.
I'm knocking on
everything.
We were going to Australia in a couple weeks.
Oh, and yeah, and then there are big bugs there.
Big ones.
What am I thinking? I think we're going to Sydney, and I hope the bugs aren't in the city. Although somebody told me that there are the giant bats flying around Sydney.
Like the furry ones?
Yeah.
The fruit bats?
Flying foxes, maybe fruit bats.
Oh, I love a flying fox.
Yeah, flying fox.
If you see one, you should put it in a towel and give it mango. Because I've seen that a lot.
I'm on a sea bat diet. I see a bat, I give it a mango.
I diet. No, yeah. Too dumb.
I am. I'm going, that's, God, I didn't even think about the fact that I don't like big bugs and I'm going to Australia next week.
That's so exciting.
I'm very pumped. It was,
you won't see much.
I don't think so. We're not planning on spending a lot of time in the outback, but every time I see a video of like a homicidal, like a spider the size of a Subway sandwich, like on a windshield of a car, it's always Australia.
Just don't drive.
That's a great solution. Yeah.
Yeah. Next week's episode, we have a lot of listener emails.
You all really turned out and we appreciate it.
And we're going to save it for next week because
that feels right.
They're still coming in.
Oh, they're still coming in. You as to be expected with our wonderful listenership, everyone understands instructions and plays with them very well.
You all raised your hands and said, but wait, we have homework. Aren't you going to collect it?
Were you that sort of kid?
No, I wanted to throw a spear through that kid.
Yeah, that I did.
I was like, I prayed religious prayers for this moment and you blew it.
I know.
I was always, did not have homework.
Wow, that did not
have my homework. Didn't have my homework. Mm. Wouldn't do it. I think I was addicted to panic or something.
That's that has been described to me of like not being addicted to the stress of not like this was a thing for me where I used to be very late all the time to things. Mm-hmm. And boy, I got read one time by a mentor of mine who was like, I think you're kind of addicted to the feeling of running late.
God.
And now, and you know what? That was a tough addiction to kick.
And that cured you.
That cured me. Oh, well, it took a lot of, I think also a big part of it was Chris very kindly, early on in our relationship was like, hey, I just want you to know, like when you're late for stuff with me, it makes me feel like you don't value our time together. And I was like, oh, that's not what I want you to think.
Wow.
Instead, really what it was in my head is that I suffer from an illness where the shortest amount of time it has ever taken me to get from one place to the next, I'm like, that is the amount of time that it should always take to get there.
I deserve to have something be easy for once is the mindset behind running late all the time. I'm tired. I would like to lay down for 5 more minutes.
Anna, before we go, who would we cast?
As the Mongolian Deathworm. God, the first person I thought of was Brad Dourif, but he's already played a worm guy.
Oh, Worm Tongue. Worm, but this tongue. Is full worm.
This is full worm. Austin Butler.
Really good. Okay. Okay, we're casting Mongolian Deathworm,
okay.
Lambden Worm, and Sinkhole Sam.
God, Sinkhole Sam.
I'm going to say Austin Butler for Lambden Worm, British. Probably an interesting accent. I mean, I know he's not British.
He's not British, but you know he's dying to play British.
He loves it. He loves a new accent.
He loves it. Yeah, I could see like... our friend Doug Jones.
Doug Jones. Oh, my God.
Maybe Sinkhole Sam for him,
Sinkhole Sam. Yeah. Opportunity for some dialogue, some funniness. Monologue, hopefully. Yeah. Brad Dourif, Austin Butler, and Doug Jones. What a great trio.
Yeah.
Where's their buddy comedy?
I don't know. And Mongolian Deathworm, I'm going to cast against type and say Javier Bardem.
Wow. From Worm Rider to... Worm beer.
I just think he knows worms. He already knows how to ride a worm.
He knows worms.
So he can be one.
I can't wait for when we are one day very close friends with Javier Bardem and we can say, you know something about you, Javier. You know worms.
You know worms. And your head, the head that you have makes it look like you're a tall guy, but you're not.
He's not?
Wait, isn't he not tall? Didn't I find that out at some point? Am I going to embarrass myself?
No, wow.
I felt like I learned that he wasn't tall.
He does have a tall man's head.
He has a tall man's head.
Wow, this would really... Anyone can be whatever height they like, and I support that. But sometimes people look like they should be tall or short.
What'd you say? 5'11". Okay, well, that's...
Okay.
He looks like someone who's like spooky tall.
Yeah, I've been told that I have the head of a shorter person than I am.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's interesting.
I do agree with that.
That's so interesting.
For the first like 2 years I knew Andrew, I thought of him as someone who was like 5'8".
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And every time, like for a while, it was like every time I saw you, I was like, wow, Andrew's tall.
You know what it is? And this is, I'm, you know, working on my posture. Mm. And I was like 5'9 when I was like 10 years old. I've been tall for a long time. I'm not tall, but I was tall for a long time. Mm-hmm. And all of my friends were typically on the shorter end of the kids in class. And I remember a movement teacher pointing out that, that I was like, the posture stuff was... And she was like, you're not shy. So that's interesting that your like posture is sort of stupid. And she was like, were all your childhood best friends a lot shorter than you? And I was like, oh my God.
That was Marlene?
That was Joanne Edelman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Our movement teachers like to sort of, for their own amusement, have a stand up in front of them and pace back and forth and tell people like, you broke your leg when you were what, like 10?
Yeah.
Okay. Play
Isn't
football?
That amazing? Yeah. You know what? That's the one thing in acting school I didn't really mind. I was like, it felt like kind of like a carnival trick.
I know. I'm like mad that they didn't do me then. They didn't do me.
I could have figured some stuff out.
I know.
Anna, thank you for letting me talk about monster worms to you.
Andrew, thank you for letting me hear you talk about monster worms to me.
And everybody else, get out.